Right, welcome along to the No Excuses Gaming Podcast. If you win here, you have won fair and square, okay? There's no lag on the connection, there's no drift on the controller's joystick, there's no bugs in the game, unless you've been beaten, in which case all of those things have clearly applied. I'm Stefan Powell, welcome along to Press X to Continue. It's lovely to have your company. Now, usually, I'd have my co-host, the actor, the voice performer, the legend that is Einel Tomlinson with us. However, he is sadly being all serious and adult and performing a live theatre show touring the country, so he can't actually be with us, but we are going to hear from him a bit later on in the episode. So while he is away, though, the gamers will come out to play. So this week, we are joined by the presenter and esports host and queen of the Continue Club. It's Frankie Ward. Frankie, lovely to have you with us again.
Thank you for having me. I'm the queen?
You're the queen of the... Well, you came up with a name, so you kind of have to be the queen.
Yes, and I always do have to hit continue because that's how frequently I die.
Yeah, very good. And I haven't seen the fully upholstered leopard print chair before, I don't think, on Press X.
It is a bench. Yeah, my neighbour David helped me upholster it. I was like, what is kind of slightly gamey, but also is not kind of neon lighting-y, typical gamey? And I was like, leopard print.
Fantastic. Yeah, go with it. I mean, I'm enjoying it. Very good. I'm very well upholstered, Dave, from next door. Good work.
Thank you.
For those of you listening to this, that doesn't really work. It's a visual gag, but Frankie's got a lovely leopard print upholstered bench.
I have upholstered my neighbour and I sit on him.
And he looks great. And we've also got with us, of course, it is Keza, who've been with us many times, editor of The Guardian, writer of a book, an actual book that people can now go and buy. Keza, how exciting.
It's finally out. I know I've been going on about it on this podcast and indeed everywhere else that I speak to people for a while now, but it's finally out. I'm really, really pleased. Look how shiny. Look at it.
Oh, look at that.
It's so gorgeous. Another visual gag. Imagine the most beautiful book you've ever seen in your life, those of you that are...
Yes. Well, it's lovely. If you walk into a bookstore and you see a blue book with clouds and some coins on it, and it says Super Nintendo, how one Japanese company helps it have the world have fun, and then that's Keza's book. And then you should pick it up and then go and purchase it immediately. Well, listen, thank you very much both for being with us. Lovely to have regulars on the podcast with me while Einel is away being an actor. So let's start this week's episode with our new sort of beginnings. We thought we'd start 2026 off on a positive note, and instead of sort of sparking ire and angst by having unpopular opinions, we're having unsung hero games. Now, these are games old or new that people think perhaps we don't sing their praises often enough. And Keza, it is your privilege to be giving us an unsung hero game this week. What have you got for us?
I've picked a game that came out very close to PlayStation 5's launch and that I think I liked possibly more than anybody else in the universe. It's one of those games that people who love it really understand what it is that's so great about it. And other people generally like, sorry, what was that again? And the game is Returnal.
Oh, good choice.
It is a time loop science fiction shooter from Housemarque, which is a really OG PlayStation studio. They've been making extremely good games for a very long time. And it is one of the cleverest games, like narratively one of the cleverest games I've ever played. But all of that is hidden behind a very hardcore, difficult third-person shooter, right? Like it mixes arcade shmup style shooting with really fluid, beautiful movement. And it's a roguelike, if it wasn't hard enough already. You also, every time you die, you are right back to the beginning with no stuff and you have to start again and again and again. And I played this game during the pandemic, obviously early 2021, when it was, basically we were all stuck in a horrible time loop where nothing ever seemed to get better. So it was a game that came along at the right time for me in that putting myself voluntarily into this horrible planet with all these aggressive aliens in it felt like the right thing to do at that time. It felt like an appropriate response to the circumstances. But it's also got fantastic acting from, I believe her name is Jane Perry, who plays the main character. It's got a sequel coming out, well, a sort of sequel, follow-up coming out soon. Saros, I believe it's called.
Yeah, Jane Perry's amazing in it. In fact, I'm going to, did she win the BAFTA
for it? She won the BAFTA.
She won the BAFTA for it. Yeah.
She won the BAFTA. So, I mean, it's a really incredible game. And I think about it all the time. You know, every now and then I'm just like, I really think about how it made me feel. Because the idea of a death time loop roguelike game, we're all familiar with that, right? You die, you go back to the beginning, start again. But this turns that into a really clever meditation on like time itself, because it's a science fiction game. And I think, you know, it's been 5 years, so there's probably, I'm not going to spoil it. Even though it's been 5 years, I do think that people should get there, because about halfway through the game, something happens that really made me feel rewarded for all the hours I put into it and all the time I'd spent thinking about its themes. Something happens that's one of the cleverest things that I've ever seen in a game. And I don't think enough people even got to the halfway point, because it is really hard, but it's tough. Worth it.
Yeah, so Returnal, I dropped off.
It's brilliant. Yeah, most people did, Stefan. Yeah. I don't blame you. It is difficult, but it's worth it. And I think more people should give it a shot. I think they may have changed it a little bit in the intervening years as well. I think it's slightly kinder now than it was when it came out.
Pray for that. Frankie, I can see you nodding vigorously along there with Keza.
I wanted to play Returnal, and when it came out, I didn't have a PlayStation 5, and it's on my list, but I'm also bad at games. And as I always say, I don't have time for this. I'm a mother. So I don't know whether I should start or not, but I remember when Jane won the BAFTA. I think it won. Did it win Game of the Year as well?
This is my only quibble with you here, Keza, is that I wonder, I see why you've chosen Return. I think it's a fantastic game, but I feel like it had a lot of plaudits at the time. So I feel like people did sing its praises.
I think everyone's forgotten about it though, Stefan, because the reason I picked it for this week is because the sequel's coming out really soon, or the follow-up. Mm. And every time I've been like super excited for Saros, you guys loved Returnal, people have been like, what was Returnal again? And that's happened like 4 or 5 times in the last few weeks. And I've started to think, I think it was a critical darling, definitely. Mm. But I'm not sure that most people played it, and most people, or even, you know, if they remember it now, maybe they saw that it was Game of the Year, but I'm not sure it's got, I think it deserves more. However many plaudits it's got, it deserves
more. It's not enough.
And also, if you think about it, BAFTA, it rewards craft, and it's essentially an award voted for by geeky people, whereas the Game Awards is a lot more populist. Mm. So winning a BAFTA, okay, you know, the year I hosted the BAFTAs in 2023. See, no one remembers that either.
But I remember, Frankie, I was there. I came up and I congratulated you, gave you a big handshake afterwards, said, well done. Did a fantastic job as well, didn't she, Keza?
Fantastic. I was there also. I remember very well.
I got Eva's name wrong at the end because we had to replace the best, who was giving out best game at the end, and I was like, anyway, moving on from my anxiety. But the year I hosted it at Vampire Survivors one, like, so that's an example. Sorry, I've gone off on a tangent, I made it about myself, but like, BAFTA, just because something wins best game doesn't mean it's like the most popular game on earth. Yeah. Vampire Survivors is hugely popular, but it's not like people go, oh my God, that's the best game I've ever played. Right.
I mean, I can remember I might have told this story on this podcast, but I remember vividly having to explain to the editor of the 10 o'clock news what Vampire Survivors was. Yeah.
And it was like, such a weird one, wasn't it, to win for like a mainstream publication. You know, usually when you can put a lovely screenshot of it up and you can be like, look at this game, this won a BAFTA. Whereas with Vampire Spiders, you had to be like, really, guys?
I had like 10 minutes or whatever to prepare a piece like for the 10 o'clock news. I was like, how do I describe this to people who've got no idea what a console even is, let alone
looks like it's from 1992.
Still gives me stress. So we have stress streams over the same BAFTA awards, Frankie. Look at that.
Well, imagine standing on stage and looking at about 30 people who are there from Sony for God of War and they haven't won.
I mean, it's bizarre, isn't it?
Feel sorry for them. I always feel sorry for everyone else who doesn't win. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's the other side of the award shows. Like, it's really, obviously, it's wonderful for people who win, but you imagine it must be crushing if you get your whole studio there and you don't win. It must be really sad.
And, you know, not to take anything away from Vampire Survivors, it's an amazing game. I still play it. Mm. I was actually dabbling in it the other day because it is fun, but.
Only game designers would pick that, though. Only a panel of game designers would pick that, which is why the BAFTAs are great. Yeah, only a panel of, like, proper nerds would pick that as Game of the Year, though, wouldn't they?
True.
Yes. So, okay, very good. Returnal. So, do we like Keza's choice of Returnal? Is it an unsung hero game? Let us know. You know what to do. Find us. Get involved in the Discord or find us on social media. Press X Podcast on Instagram, Press X Pod on TikTok, and get involved in the conversation. There are some people who have already sent some other suggestions through for unsung hero games. Chappers said this, Frankie. In 2009, a time filled with Crackdown, GTA, Infamous, and whatever Assassin's Creed was out, The Saboteur was a stylish cult classic with the unique will to fight mechanic. Hours were lost liberating neo-occupied Paris, literally bleeding colour back into a noir-inspired world. Does not get the love it deserves. I can't remember that.
I can't tell if Keza loves it or hates it because literally a face hugger just crawled onto her face and started suffocating.
I wrote an article the year after entitled Why I Hate the Saboteur, which is... I truly, truly despise that game for reasons that we needn't go into because I'm not going to ruin the vibe. But like, that's a love or hate Marmite game for sure. I really, really hated it. So I'm not going to agree on that.
But we like this. Not everybody agrees, you know. And it's now that's the beautiful thing. And we like to think about Press X is to create a safe space for people to disagree. Chappers, it's fair to say. I wish, please, if you're listening to this on your whatever app you choose to listen to your podcast, I would definitely go and watch the visual version of this on either Spotify or YouTube and just look at the face you made Keza pull, or rather the sort of hand-hugging thing that was going on. It was quite something. And then Evs has suggested a title called Cook, Serve, Delicious, a game so weird I don't even know how to describe it. It's overcooked, but you have to shout it yourself. Well, Evs, I haven't come across that one, but hey... I love the suggestion. Keep them coming in. Your unsung hero down. Games. Yeah. Cook, serve, delicious, says Evs. So nice. There we have it. So keep your unsung hero games coming in. Frankie, you'll get to do yours in like full Technicolor glory next time we have you on. I don't feel like you should just waste one by throwing it away, you know? I feel like you should have a time to sit there and do it properly.
Okay. But it is Buster Crew.
Okay, fine. And we will have more time to delve into that sometime in the future. Right, okay, let's get into some trivia then. So you can get your ideas, your niche facts, your, I don't know, interesting game quirks in our secret trivia submission section of the Discord. There is a Discord channel there. You can go and stick your ideas in there and have a listen. And then basically what happens is David, our producer, turns them into a question, which is very difficult usually for us to get. So this is the question this week. Best remaster has only ever been a category at the Game Awards once. Best remaster has only ever been a category at the Game Awards once. Which game is the only ever winner of that prize? That is a fantastic question. So bravo to whoever came up with that. That's a really good question. Now, Keza, you are currently number one on our list.
I'm really, the thing is, I'm actually far too invested in this stat. And now I'm like worried every time I answer a question and bringing my average down.
You are number one. So no pressure about, you know, because we've got some clever maths now that goes to like figure out who's number one. You are one. So no pressure. We'll have the answer later on, but any sort of early thoughts, Frankie, going into this one?
Final Fantasy VII Rebirth's an obvious one, and then Resident Evil 2 as well, like in terms of ones that would win that category. But then,
to be fair, Frank, you're above me as well.
I don't watch the Game Awards the whole way through, though, because
no one
does.
No one in the world
does.
Nobody in the universe has watched that whole thing through, apart from people who have to sit there. And I think even they probably zone out for some of it. I'm going to say it's The Last of Us.
Okay, ooh. Last of Us. Yes, good show. Final Fantasy. Yeah, Frankie, you're third.
Complete guess.
Am I third at the moment? Really? That's because lots of more people have come on the show and been wrong.
Well, no, there's some clever maths is going on here as well. This is there's some algorithm doing work on this. Look at that. It's like a.
Oh my God, it's an Excel spreadsheet.
Complicated Excel spreadsheet.
Cells.
It has got
color
coded cells.
Red.
Yeah, around.
I don't want to lose my continue club crown. This is the thing. Can I tell you, going to the Game Awards is really weird, especially when you're there to film a documentary about someone who wins an award and they don't announce the award on the night because they've just forgotten to.
What the happened to you?
That happened. I was filming a documentary about Player Unknown, and this is 2017. It didn't come out, unfortunately, because Twitch made me redundant, and it's fine. I went on to host the BAFTAs. But
take that.
Have it, Twitch.
So, yeah. Second time I've lost a job, guys. It won't be the last.
We've all lost jobs, Frankie. It's a safe space to get off the chest. It's all good.
But I was there filming Brendan Green, Player Unknown, and... yeah, it was really awkward at the end of the awards because, like, they hadn't announced his category, so he didn't know if they'd won Best Multiplayer or not. It turned out they did, but, you know, I don't think he found that out until he got to the secret after party, because there's the real the real after party, which is sponsored by McDonald's, and there was genuinely a chandelier of like McCafe cups and Charlie XCX in literally wrapped in cellophane. And then there was Jeff Cayley's whiskey bar club. So Brendan went off to that and then he was happy.
I know. I mean,
this is it because they don't, I think this is still the case. They don't actually announce all the awards because they are already 4 hours long and half of it's adverts, right? So they just don't, some of the categories just didn't get, I don't know if that's still the case, but it was for a long time where people would just not know.
But this was a genuine mistake, or they maybe just ran out in time on the broadcast. They just went, oh, just we'll bring Fortnite out to do a big talk, and then later on we'll not do the
sometimes, you know, like people talk about like games industry is so big, it's so impressive, we're so modern now, and then you hear stories of this, like, yeah, we're still a lot behind, aren't we, lads? I know that was 2017, but still,
they've never forgotten to announce an Oscar, have they?
Yeah,
never. I don't know, I'm not a film historian.
if they are, let us know in the comments if they have. Right, okay, so we will bring you the answer to that one at the end of the show. Best remaster has only ever been a category at the Game Awards once. Who won the prize? Have you seen this about Sony's AI Ghost? So what we're going to talk
Sony's
about
Sony's AI Ghost.
So Sony seems to have ideas for an AI Ghost where basically what happens is if you get stuck in a game, they've patented an idea for what they've described as like an overlay that would come up to show you via, so AI would show you how you would go about getting over the next bit of the game. That makes sense. Mm. And so we've talked a lot about AI on this pod, but not really delved into it. But this idea that like we should be making games and the sort of role of AI in games, is this a good idea to be helping players to make games more accessible? Are we just trying to shoehorn AI into every conversation that we ever have and everything's AI now? You can't move for AI. It's on my phone without me asking for it. And is this games getting in the act? Do we need it? Do we not need it? What do we think?
Hang on. Is this idea just Mario Kart 64's ghosts? Well, is my question.
That's what I'm thinking here. So when it helps you when you get stuck, but isn't that what like I like
don't
going
need
to
AI
like,
for that. Not yeah, generative AI anyway.
No, I've got playthroughs for that, haven't I? Where journalists have spent time playing a game and giving me expert sort of advice. I don't know.
Also, racing game ghosts is already a thing. There are certain Nintendo games where it shows you a little ghost of Mario or whoever jumping around so that you can see how to do it without you know, drinking 60 litres of water every time.
Yeah,
or
I know.
But the problem with the AI conversation is that in games, AI means all sorts of different things. And indeed, in like broader tech, like games have been using AI in some form, obviously forever.
Since
Inky Pinky Blinky Clyde, there have been AI controlled characters, but like AI that is artificial intelligence that controls behaviors of characters, very different from generative AI, which creates, you know, words or art. And, you know, it's the same with Ark Raiders had a big AI controversy, the extremely popular multiplayer game, because the voices are AI, I think. So it's that the script is just read out by an AI voice. But also the reason it's so good is because the enemies are also very complex AI, and the way they work together and the way they behave is really, really cool. So that's like AI that's made the game better. Whereas the AI voices that replace people who could have been reading those lines, bad. So like there's this distinction, isn't there, between like generative AI or AI that replaces people and AI that, as games have always used them, helps you with the game or helps characters to behave more interestingly.
I also wonder whether this is just I know it's an old patent, apparently it's been around for a little while, but sort of resurfaced. I wonder sometimes people, frankly, lean on AI as an answer for something a problem that doesn't exist because it seems to be the done thing.
I confess, like, I do use AI to get me out of situations where I can't be bothered to type something into Google. So I do go, "Hi Gemini," because it's literally just like searching through things. But when it comes to games, I would rather go on YouTube and watch someone try and tackle that section that I'm having difficulty with. Or, and I don't do this often because it opens the floodgates and sets a dangerous precedent, but if I'm on Twitch and I'm really, really struggling, then maybe I will say to my chat, and then it maintains that kind of social idea of playing games and getting through something together.
Yeah, like, well, that's the point of it. That's sort of the point of Twitch, isn't it? Really, is that you do things together. And the beauty, I can remember doing a piece on this a while ago, but one of the reasons that people argued that Battle Royale games became so popular was because it opened itself up. I've never been a Twitch streamer, so frankly, so you can correct me here, but it opened, like when you play Fortnite, it might open up a dialogue with your community where they'd be like, oh, go to this place next or do that next or to offer you solutions to problems that you face.
To be honest, I think with Battle Royale is that, especially at the start of, say, a PUBG game, because those games could be 35 minutes long, it was that you just had that looting downtime and the map so big mm-hmm. that you were unlikely to come across battles. Like Fortnite, actually, I don't talk to my chat that often because I'm like a hunter busy. In Fortnite. I'm going after...
She's concentrating.
I've got a reputation of what actually I really don't in Fortnite, despite the fact that I present in it. But yeah, so I think that's one of the reasons that those games appealed so much. But like when I'm playing a game like Ball X Pit, I've really enjoyed streaming. It's not the most popular category on Twitch, but like I really like hearing about other people's builds and, you know, always with the caveat, I'm not necessarily going to do what you guys are telling me to do, but kind of, if I do have a question about a skill or a character or anything like that, then people in my chat will be polite and wait to be asked. And then you have that thing. Whereas if you just rely on AI, you lose that. And I know AI is going to suit some people better. Some people don't want to go on, open up the internet. They want to have that solo gaming experience. I get that. And maybe AI is a good choice that doesn't take them too far out of the game.
But then that's a really good point you've made, Frankie, which is that, you know, games, there's a brotherhood and sisterhood of people who play games, and there's a connection between all of us, even in single player games, because when you are talking about games with other people, or when you were, you know, in olden times, when you were in the playground talking about how to, or, you know, making, some kid would always make stuff up about a game when they're in the playground. But that kind of connection there, which then became reading message boards, reading game FAQs when you got stuck, which has now become go watch a YouTube video. There's still like a human there. There's a human to human piece of communication that happens there that AI is looking to remove. And that's the same when it's like, oh, AI voice is cool. That's removing a person. It's removing an actor. AI art, we're removing an artist. Like when AI kind of removes a reason to connect with another person, then that's when it starts to become something that feels bad or feels like gross, I think.
Yeah, just delving into this a little bit more. So the information that the PlayStation had written down here says, although video game technology has seen many advances, some players find themselves in need of assistance. Games have become very complicated, so players who are not experts often quit or find it hard to complete tasks. They are able to do research for the game or even look up prior gameplays on internet sites, but that process is time-consuming and many times not relevant to the tasks or scenarios currently being encountered by the player. So that's where the AI ghosts would come in. Interesting stuff. Well, look, let us know what you think of this suggestion. You can get involved in the Discord or on social media. Find us, comment, be part of the conversation. We'd love to hear your take on that. Now, before we get into your review, Frankie, Inel is busy being a proper actor and travelling the country doing a show that is going down a storm with critics and fans alike, doing his Horrible History show. And he sent us a little clip. Now, I normally listen to these before I play them out. So I've got no idea what Inel's sharing. This is his tour diary for us here on Press X. And in not so professional sense, I haven't listened to this first. So I'm listening to this with you. And for the first time, let's see what Inel's got to share with us.
Hey, what's going on, Press X fans? Big up the Exy Beasts and the Continue Clubbers.
He doesn't know that we've got the queen of the Continue Club on, Frankie. Otherwise, he would have addressed you by your proper title, of course.
I appreciate the Continue Club is.
It's Inel here, currently on tour for the Horrible Histories Live and Concert. And the last time I caught up with you guys, I was in Darlington in the north of England. Since then, I have been in Bristol. I've been in Cardiff and Wales and also in Manchester. And I'm going to be heading over to Liverpool next week as well. Yeah, so far it's been an absolutely fantastic tour. Packed out audiences, some really good reviews have been getting written up by us as well. Not by us, for us. Be mad if we're writing our own reviews. But yeah, I won't lie, I haven't had too much time to play games lately on the tour. But in the little bit of downtime I've been getting, I have been checking out Sword of the Sea. Absolutely beautiful game. From some of the same creators from Journey and Sky. I keep telling Stefan to play Sky because it's such an amazing game. But Sword of the Sea with a soundtrack composed by Austin Wintory, who won a Grammy for the soundtrack for this game. That's how beautiful the soundtrack is. Game objective-wise, imagine the gameplay of Journey mixed in and fused with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. Come on. I know it sounds mad, but give this game a go. It's absolutely beautiful.
He's given it a fantastic sell. And of course, we've got, if you're interested in that and you want to know more about the composer, Austin Wintry, that Aina was saying, we have got a special episode that we did with Austin that you can go and watch on our YouTube right now. So you can go and check that out. We're lovely to hear Aina there on tour. He's managing to find some time to play, which is great. And he's right. He has been telling me to play Sky for a long time. So I will definitely go and check this, check that one out as well. Top work, Aina. If you get a chance to go and see the show, by the way, Horrible Histories, it's like you said, the reviews aren't lying, it's very good. So yeah, fingers crossed he's gonna be back with us very soon here on Press X. But right, let's jump on now to this chat. Have you seen this about the French government giving 28 members of the Sandfall Interactive team? They're the gang who made Claire Obscure Expedition 33. They give them knighthoods. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I'm just, the thing that really amuses me about this is the quote that came alongside it, which was that this team have brought a whole new level of attention to video games in France. And I'm just imagining generations of Ubisoft designers being like, sacre bleu! And being absolutely furious about it. Because I would be, if I'd been anybody who'd worked at, you know, the giant multinational video game company Ubisoft, which is also French and has been French since the 80s. Like, I feel sorry for them. They've not got knighthoods.
Let's not dwell on the negatives here, Kessa. Let's turn this into a positive. So basically, Frank, you made us think. Who would you give a knighthood to in the game space? Who deserves a knighthood in gaming?
If I was going to give a knighthood to someone in the French gaming scene, I would give it to a streamer called Gataga, who has created not one, but two of the biggest esports orgs in the world, not just in France. So he created an organization called Vitality with some friends. Sold that and then created a French rival for them called Gentlemates. And I'm kind of biased towards them, partly because we had a big show in Lyon for Fortnite last year, like 10,000 French fans. They were the best audience I've ever worked with. And a huge part of that was basically because the Gentlemates fans will watch any esport the Gentlemates are in. And normally esports is like very segregated based on the game. But this is an organization that brings everyone together. But Gataga's also been one of the biggest streamers in France for over a decade. And you know, he can take any game and make it popular as he does with any esport. And so I know it's not games development, but for me personally, like if I was the French government right now and I'm handing out knighthoods willy nilly, I would give something to him for making so much money and, you know, giving us a great show when we visit France.
Super valid, gaming, though, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. We said gaming in the broader sense, Frankie, so that works for us. Who cares? Who are you handing a knighthood out to?
I'd give a knighthood to Nicolas Doucet, who is the head of Team Asobi, which is a developer in Japan that made Astrobot. And he's been working in game development forever and has been leading what remains really of Sony Japan Studio for a long time. And they came up with one of my favorite games of all time, which is Astrobot. So I think he's definitely a French superstar of game development.
Fantastic. Good shout all around. And I feel like you've got a lot of thought and they're very heartfelt, both of your choices. I've gone for all the mods out there, the Discord mods. So for Press X, it's DW, DJ and Mel, the people who keep the communities going, the people that are there helping Twitch streamers out, looking after their content. People do it often for the love of it, not for any cash, but because they just enjoy being part of a community and keeping it all ticking over. You all deserve knighthoods in my eyes. That's my choice. So that's all very wholesome today, actually, on Press X, isn't it? Very good.
Unlikely for an episode with me in it.
I know, actually. This is no less smut, more wholesomeness. This is interesting.
Because Aino's not here. He's the bad influence. He's gone to do a slave for children.
That's the common denominator here.
I thought it was 2026. You've turned over a new leaf, Frankie, but actually no, just wait.
I definitely haven't.
It will be back. Right, Frankie, talk to us then about your review this week. Is Mugenics. What is it? Who is it? What's it all about?
So I think this game has been 14 years in the making. It's from Edmund McMillan and Tyler Glales. So basically, they're both known for making really difficult games. So Edmund, I should probably call him McMillan, sorry, Mr. McMillan, has got a legion of fans from the original Super Meat Boy, but also Binding of Isaac, which is regarded as kind of the godfather, I guess, of roguelikes. And then Tyler Glidell, I'm less familiar with his works, but he's probably best known for a really tricky platformer called End Is Nigh, which is now absolutely on my wish list. In fact, I bought it. It's in my Steam library. I'm going to be playing it after playing this game. So Mujanix first came to a lot of people's attention, I think, probably around the summertime when this trailer came out, which was a live action trailer with a vet and some very naughty cats. And the cats are very naughty in Mujanix. So you basically take them in off the street or you breed them. So at night, your cats will hopefully breed with each other if they're so inclined. All your cats have abilities and you want them to breed to basically create better versions of these abilities when you send them out on these dungeon-like runs. And you go through different environments. So you start in Act 1. There are three acts. You start in the alley and you make your way either towards the sewers and the boneyard, or you make your way towards... I can't remember the name of the other environment. You're trying to make your way to the caves, basically. You can tell that I haven't got to the caves yet, can't you? Because I'm so bad at this game. Being a roguelike, you're meant to die. And you basically end up with a lot of dead cats because you're trying to assemble a party from the cats that you have. So each day you will end up with a new cat, even if your cats haven't bred, because you'll pick a cat off the street. I realise I've gone in way too early with the cats breeding thing rather than actually explaining the gameplay. I'm so sorry. You can tell
it just sounds fantastically crazy. That's what I love about it. It's unique. And in a space where we argue that games, you know, are getting more amalgamised and quite, you know, often sort of broad strokes being the same thing. This sounds, I haven't heard of anything like this before, Frankie, which is rare.
Well, it's the actual main core of the gameplay is a 10 by 10 tile battleground. So it's turn-based combat. You obviously play against as many enemies as there are on the field. And sometimes you're playing against a single boss. So there are mini bosses and then a bigger boss at the end of the level itself. And if you've got the right amount of cats to choose from, you can create hopefully a balanced party of kind of range and spells and healing and so on and so forth. If you don't have that, the game kind of helps you because you get to equip collars onto your cats at the start of each run. You can take 4 in total. You can take less than that if you wish. And so say if you unlock the cleric collar after your first successful run, that will give you at least one healing ability. And as you level up, you'll be able to add more based on that class as well.
Yeah.
But you don't get to decide the initial, you don't really get to decide what your cats have because that's determined by what they have when you pick them up as strays or when you get them as kittens, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of the time you are working with what you have because if you don't send your cats out, you'll run out of food. So sometimes runs are really satisfying and successful to a point. And you can decide not to go on to the next area and send your cats home to try and save them for breeding. And sometimes it just like ends in disaster. And that's the thing with this game. I personally have not got that far in it because I'm finding it really hard.
Yeah. Is it fun, Frankie?
It is fun. I think if you are a like roguelike fan, if you're a fan of McMillan and his work, then I think you'll really love this game. And the people that are loving this game. Mm. People who've got over 100 hours into it are saying that they've only just scratched the surface. There's over 1,000 potential abilities in this game. It's obviously a huge labor of love. The music, I think I would probably get tired of it after 100 hours, but they've got songs that you're unlocking in the game as you go along that kind of reflect in the action and it's got a very catchy theme tune. I should probably come onto the humor as well. The humor is, again, very similar, I believe, to Binding of Isaac. You know, although instead of dead baby jokes, it's dead cat jokes. There was a review by publication PC Games N, which marked the game down on humor. It still gave it an 8 out of 10. The developers did not take kindly to this, shall we say. And it's almost kind of coloured my opinion of the game. And I'm slightly nervous to talk about it because I don't want to fall out of favour. But at the same time, I think it's interesting that that there's been a sensitivity towards that on both sides.
Comedy is subjective, isn't it? That means you're never going to, like, and therefore you're opening yourself up to criticism, isn't it, Keza?
Well, yeah, I mean, that critic got to be able... I mean, I think Mugenics is a really cool game with an amazingly off-putting sense of humour.
Mm.
But I'm also like, it's just not my humour. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if I were then writing about it and I were to say it's not my humour, that's an opinion I should be allowed to have. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Without having been jumped on by the developers. The thing is, it is such a personal project, clearly. I mean, it's been years and years and years, as Frankie says, in the making. And I think that it's understandable that someone who's essentially been working on a game for this long, like since Super Meat Boy, I think, which was forever ago. I understand why there's some sensitivity. I'd feel sensitive if I feel sensitive about my book and I didn't work on it for nearly that long.
But you're still going, Frank, even though you're finding it really hard, the sense of humor is what it is, you're still going with it.
Yeah, and I don't mind the sense of humour too much because I'm aware of what that sense of humour is going to be because I watched the trailer. If you've watched the trailer, you know what the sense of humour is going to be. And yes, there's a lot of poo in the game. Like, literally one of the abilities is called Dump, and it's where your cat literally, like, takes a crap on a tile that, you know, one of the four tiles around it. That can be used almost as a sort of shield, but also can be a hindrance, can have coins inside. So that's one of the things I judge games by these days is joy of discovery. So from, like, you know, AI's slop at one end to Animal Well at the other. Like, that's my kind of joy of discovery graph, right?
Poop is with the animal well. That's
well, yes, exactly. Well, yeah, because you don't know what's inside the poo. And that's one of the great things about this game, because as you start to, you know, birth more powerful cats and you start to have more cats to choose from in your arsenal, aka your house, before you go on runs, you kind of know, okay, right, well, I want to take this character because they have a bear trap, and I want to take this character because he's going to work really well with the tank class. And so I can combine those abilities. So this cat has got an ability that when they're within melee range, they can grab the enemy and fling them to another tile or behind them. Well, if I've laid with my other character a bear trap on that tile, then great, I can start flinging people into those bear traps. And so, you know, that's a very basic early tactic that you might want to use, but the joy of discovering that you can do that is something that I'm really on board with, and that is the joy that people are unlocking as they go. The other thing that's really fun with the game is you unlock items you can equip. Some of them are cursed, which means that you're going to inflict bleed on your enemies, but also you're going to inflict bleed on yourself. There's a potion called PCP that you can take, and you will become like 5 strength stronger, if that's the technical term. But you'll also have madness, so you'll attack everyone on the field. You'll attack your own party. You will be almost unstoppable, and you'll literally skip other people's turns so you can keep attacking and murdering. And for some people, they've just ended up with one cat in their party and they've managed to finish a run because it's made their cat so OP that they're a one cat army. And for some people like me, it's completely destroyed their run. So,
this is the great thing
about the game.
It's not for everyone by the sounds of it then, Frankie, but if you're into it, you're going to get into it. And it's got a Metacritic score of 90, so it's clearly going down well with those who have got into it.
And I honestly don't think you need to even think about the humour if it's not your thing. Yes, there is, like, another thing you can do is you're trying to make a bigger house and various things that will help you with your breeding programme and other things. And so in order to do that, you need to send off cats. And that's another thing I'm finding hard. You can only send cats on one run. And they're either going to die or come back to the house. And then essentially you can breed them or you can donate them to these nefarious NPCs in exchange for these rewards, which means you go through a lot of cats and you go through a lot of dead cat humour.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel. Well, hey, look, I'm going to have a look at it. I'm going to think about it. But I mean, if it's for you, let us know. Are you into it? Are you not into it? Did you like the humour? Do you agree with Frankie? Do you not? You know what to do. Find us on social media, PressX Podcast or PressX Pod, or get involved in the Discord as well. Right, as we wrap things up now for today's episode, the big question from today's show, this is when our producers scheme behind our backs and come up with a question based on what we've been talking about on the episode. And this question this week is this. Another Fantastic Game Awards. You've done your usual after party mingling with cellophane wrapped Charlie XCX and supped your fill of McDonald flat whites from the chandelier. All of a sudden, you're muscled into a secret whiskey bar by Jeff Keighley's entourage. It turns out.
Sorry.
It turns out you're up for more than an award. You're in for a knighthood because of that thing you did in a game once. But Jeff needs to know what to engrave onto the award. So tell us, what is the big gaming achievement you deserve a knighthood for? Starting with you, Keza. What's the big gaming achievement, you have just written a book, to be fair, that you deserve knighting for?
Finished Baby Steps.
Oh.
Finished it. Completed it,
wow.
Mate.
Wow.
Nearly went mad. I'm more proud of that than I am of any of these insane Masochore games I love to play. I'm just more proud of finishing Baby Steps than any of it, you know?
You deserve a knighthood for that. Very good. Frankie, what about you?
I genuinely got Megastar and Rasputin on Just Dance and didn't die from a heart attack afterwards.
Look at that. Now, obviously, for those loyal press exes, know exactly what I'm going to say here. There was a note on the question which said, anything taking place in Aberystwyth with Pia is sadly ineligible. However, I'm going to ignore that. And for those who don't know what I'm talking about, I completed Time Crisis 2 for £1. For £1 on Aberystwyth with Pia. It happened. That is a factual sentence. And therefore, I'm going to stop there and say, that's what I'm going to get knighted for. Thank you very much. Here endeth that story. What do you think we should be knighted for, by the way? Feel free to let us know in the comments. Right, trivia answer. The best remaster has only ever been a category of the Game Awards once. Which game was it for? Keza, what are you going for?
I'm going to say Last of Us as a complete guess.
Last of Us. Frankie, what are you saying?
Final Fantasy VII Remake.
I think I'm going to go for one of the Resident Evils. And the answer is Grand Theft Auto 5.
The
award was launched in 2014 and then never handed out again.
Wasn't even a remaster.
There's a reason why they discontinued that award, I imagine.
Well, at least they remembered to give it out.
Well, I know, at least I was going to say that Game Awards were carnage then. They were still carnage in 2017 when you were there. Well, there we are. I don't think that changed anything to the leaderboard. I think basically, Frank, you're still ahead of me. Keza, you're still number one, I think. But I will, if anything's changed there,
because
I don't have the algorithm in front of me, but I will let you know. Well, Keza, all the best for everything. When is the book? Where can people get hold of it?
The book is called Super Nintendo. It is out literally now in the US and the UK. You can buy it wherever you buy books. So Waterstones or Barnes & Noble, if you're in that part of the world, wherever. You can also get it from Amazon. You can also get it literally anywhere else, should you so choose.
And Frankie, you've got some exciting stuff coming up soon, haven't you, that you need to tell us about?
Yeah, I've never actually publicly revealed the name, but I am starting a new gaming series, youtube.com/Frankie Ward. The show is called Hard Bits.
Oh, I'm excited.
No, it's not what you think it is. It is a gaming chat show where I invite a guest on and I set them three very fiendishly difficult gaming challenges to find a little bit more about their psyche. For example, how would they literally kill someone in Hitman? How they cope with the pacing and the tactics at speed of Super Meat Boy Forever, and also challenge them to a boss battle in Cuphead, because it's the only game where I can get to a boss battle without technically having to do anything myself.
Very good. Well, we're excited. Looking forward to seeing that. And Keza, all the best with the book. Now it's out. Thank you very much, both of you, for being with us again here in the Continue Club. We will see you all very soon. And that is it for this episode of Press X. Don't forget to get involved in the Discord or finding us on social media. And we will be back next Tuesday for more fun. See you then. Hwyl fawr. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.